Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. And am I locked to the podium here, or can I walk around? All right. Well, I'll keep it close and see how long I can get. So I took three planes here yesterday to get here late last night. And when I left, it was negative 13 below. So it was pretty cold. So when I come here, man, it's like coming to Hawaii again. So when I come back to Colorado. So I'm going to be talking about grazing effects on grass. And you're thinking about that title and going, okay, is it the effects of the grass on the animal, or is it the effects the animal's having on the grass? And so what we're going to be talking about is, what effect does the grazing have on grass? And so when we go to the next slide, we're going to talk about what is grazing, right? So everybody knows what grazing is, right? Well, it's animals out there eating. Well, what are they eating? When we talk about grazing, we're really talking about the eating of any herbaceous plant. But we want to focus on grasses, so we'll just briefly talk about what other kind of plants there are. So we have also forbs, right? They're herbaceous. That means they're non-woody. And so when people say herbaceous, we're not trying to be all science-y and sound like we're really smart. We're just saying it's non-woody plants. So we've got forbs, grasses, rushes, and sedges. And those rushes and sedges are grass-like plants. Then the other plants that we have that are woody are trees and shrubs, okay? And so when we think about cattle, okay, they're primarily grazers, okay? So that means they're mostly eating herbaceous plants. So when we say that, how much percent of their diet do you think is herbaceous plants? Anyway, you can just yell out an answer, you know, 5! 2%? About 60 to 80% of their diet on the range is usually herbaceous plants. Okay? And when we talk about grasses being a herbaceous plant, we're thinking about monocotyledons, okay? So if you think back to biology, these are the plants that come out and they have one leaf, not two. We're two leaves. Remember, we're talking about broad leaves there. So we're talking about monocotyledons, single leaf. And they're herbaceous plants that have parallel veins. Okay? They're usually green when they're growing, right? And they have hollow stems and they have joints. So how do grasses work? Okay? In order to get to the question of what the grazing effects are, we need to know how grasses work. So I'm going to have to go through a bunch of stuff here. I've got about 3 hours of slides, and we're going to go through, and you're going to get about 5 seconds on each slide. Okay? That's what it would take, right? I build whole courses around what happens with herbivory in animals. It could literally be a whole semester. So we're going to try and put this down into 30 minutes, okay? So I'm just briefly going to talk about a few things. And so when we're talking about these plants, we have to know what kind of plants they are. We need to know what the plant parts are, and we need to know what happens, okay, when those plant parts are removed, and that's what we're going to focus on. So annual grasses, okay? So when we're talking about maybe using cereal rye, or maybe we're using sorghum, are those perennials or annuals? Those are annuals, right? So we're using annual grasses there. Well, we also have annual grasses out on the range here. This just happens to be little barley. It's one of the ones we can find here in Colorado. It's pretty common. And what is have in common with other types of grasses that are annuals? They're fast-growing. They mine resources. They mean they use a lot of the nitrogen, the phosphorus, and the potassium that's available in the soil, and they use it rapidly, all for one purpose, to produce seeds. Okay? Perennial grasses, when we look at those, they have a little bit different strategy, okay? There's a little bit slower growing, they spread a little slower, and they conserve resources, okay? They're not there to just mine everything really fast, and their whole goal is to survive to the next year, because perennials are long-lived plants. And they want to make their roots bigger, and they want to produce propagules. So it could be stolons, it could be rhizomes, it could be seeds. So our perennial grass roots, okay? We need to know what they are, right? Because these perennial plants don't have the same type of roots at the soil surface. So we have rhizomes that are below ground, and usually they occur about 2 to 3 to 4 inches below ground. That means those growing points that are down there are pretty safe from grazing, okay? You could graze super low, and those growing points are still intact below ground, okay? Stolons, those are the ones that go across the soil surface. And so anybody think about a particular species that's stoloniferous here? Really common, more southeast Colorado? Buffalo grass, yeah. And then we also have bunch grasses. So with our bunch grasses, they grow in a clump, okay? And usually their growing points are elevated. So getting to know your grass plant. All right, everyone, quickly memorize all the parts of this plant, okay? Because each part actually has a meaning, okay? And I'll just come up here really quickly. Okay, we've got the whole plant here, right? If we talk about the top down, at the top, is the inflorescence, and that happens to be the flowers, and that's where we produce the seeds, okay? And does anybody here know how grasses are pollinated? How's corn pollinated? By bees? By wind, right? So most of our grasses are all wind pollinated. And so they produce little flowers that get pollinated by wind and produce seeds. As you go down from the top there, you go along the comb, which is that kind of that center stem, okay? But you get there where there's leaves, okay? So we've got leaves, we've got leaf collars. That's where the leaf blade bends away from the plant. The leaf part that holds on to the stem, that's called the leaf sheath. And then we've got these nodes that are kind of arranged here. And those nodes kind of distinguish where there's growing points. And I'll talk about that more specifically in just a second. But just think about those nodes as points of like on a telescopic fishing pole or on a telescopic ladder. They're the points where things stretch out, grow. And that leaf, there's a leaf or a phytomer that belongs to each one of those meristems there, where those nodes are, internodes are. On the left side, those are just some of the finer points of what the leaf blade is. We've got a ligule that helps us distinguish what kind of grass it is when we compare it to others. An auricle has to do with where the leaves, the leaf sheath overlaps around the stem. And so those are just some of the major points. Let's skip ahead and not do with all that sciencey stuff. So we have the inflorescence. That's the seed head. So when we're talking about harvesting our grass just before, right about the boot stage, okay, we're talking about the inflorescence. How far up is it? Boot stage is that inflorescence is just starting to come out of the leaf sheath. So just are starting to top out of the grass plant, okay? When we talk about the stem, you can see the stem here, okay? You can see the leaf sheath, the leaf blade starting to bend away, and where that starts to bend away, that's the leaf collar. And this is the node, right? So as that stem elongates, you can see those nodes that become more prevalent. They kind of show up outside of the leaf sheath. Okay, and then we have phytomers, okay? Everybody here knows what a phytomer is, right? Exactly, right? No one here spends a lot of time talking about phytomers, but that's kind of the basic unit of grass growth. The phytomer has to do with these plant parts. So the leaf blade, the leaf sheath, the internode, the axillary buds, intercalary meristems, and the nodes, okay? So let's take a look at that. So if we are, look, I skipped ahead there. So if we take a look at the plant here, okay, and for those of you guys that can see me, we've got a phytomer, and a phytomer. Now, I didn't realize I'd have to be holding the microphone, but I guess it'll work because it'll be my grass stem, okay? So as the grass pushes up, and this is the central stem, okay, we have a leaf and a leaf collar right here. This is the leaf blade bending away. And if you think about my elbow being here as the bottom, that's kind of where the node is. Okay, the intercalary meristem is down here, but this is the leaf sheath, the leaf collar, and the leaf blade bending away. Now, inside on these grasses, we have phytomers within phytomers when the plant is very short. So when the plant is just starting to grow, we've got all of these different phytomers stacked together. As the plant starts to grow, you start to see all the phytomers, and as the plant starts to go to seed, you see a phytomer one down below, the next one up above, until you get to the top phytomers. And this just has to do with the leaf sheaths and the leaf blades, okay? Now, the reason I'm talking about this is because basically what happens when this grows is it just expands and goes up. So we're basically taking low growing points and slowly pushing them up as the grass gets older and older towards maturity, and usually they always go towards that inflorescence or seed head. Now, when we talk about the stem itself, we have these intercalary meristems, okay? And if we have those, I'll come over here for you guys here. We've got the nodes, and right above the nodes, they've got kind of a growing point right above the node where it can actually expand and grow taller, okay? That's what helps push our phytomers up, and that's what helps the stem elongation when we go to seed production. So that's kind of what the growth looks like for as far as the plant as it goes up. We also have the crown of the plant, right? So we have the crown of the plant. Right when it starts to grow, what's down there? Everything, right? We've got all of the buds. We've got all of the phytomers. We've got every part of the plant. We've got the roots. And then we've got all of those buds lined up somewhere, okay? Now, if it's a rhizomatous plant, where are those buds at? Below ground. If it's stoloniferous plant, where are those buds at for the crown? right along the stolon. And if we have a bunch grass, it's right there near the soil surface. Okay, so in order to get your grass to grow, you need certain things, right? They're not going to produce leaves. They're not going to produce tillers. Okay, and those tillers are those individual shoots that come up from the bottom of the plant. Okay, it's not going to produce them if you don't have moisture and the right temperature. You got to have nutrients. And our last speaker just talked about that a little bit. You also got to have the right proper plant age, okay, to produce a lot of tillers at the bottom. So a seedling plant, how many tillers is a seedling plant going to produce the first year? A lot or a few or one? Yeah, it's going to produce one or maybe two. Okay, it's very small. It's going to produce one stem. Okay, so if we graze a plant, say the first year it's old, the first few months it's alive, what would happen to that plant? And you guys ever seen what happens to little barley when it starts to be grazed early in the spring? A lot of people call it spit up grass or spit 'em grass, right? Because it pulls the whole plant out of the ground. They try to eat it and they just throw it back on the ground. They grab another one, same thing. That's why we don't usually try and go in and graze new seeded pastures right away, because it pulls a lot of those seedlings out of the ground. One of the other things we need to have in order to get tillering, right, is we need to have actual light there. Okay, so if the canopy is getting really closed in, then we're not doing a lot of grazing, and we don't have a lot of light accessing the plant, we actually get a lot more far red radiation. Okay, and that reduces that red to far red radiation ratio. So when that plant's shaded, it actually inhibits tillering. But when you start to open that canopy up and let more light hit it, tillering increases. Okay, that's one of the other things that affects tillering. Then also one of the other things that affects tillering is the amount of defoliation the plant has already had. Okay, and depending on the plant size, the plant age, the timing of defoliation, and what you use to do it and what height, that will affect whether or not it can tiller. So let's go into that. Okay, so when we're talking about that plant going up, that stem going up, and we've got an apical bud there in the center of that stem, okay? When the plant is just starting to grow, it's very low to the ground. But as the season goes along, for cool season grass, we're talking June and July in our area, that apical bud is getting towards the top, and that's going to be the top of the telescopic rod, okay, for your fishing pole or your ladder. It's the top of the telescope where everything is attached. And if we remove that, we don't have a lot left for our phytomers, okay? Because if we look at this, the phytomers are all attached right there on that bud on the sides. And as we expand up, if we remove that, we lose the ability to push any more leaves up. So then if we're going to get regrowth or growth, it's going to have to come from somewhere down below, from some other kind of bud. And so this just gives you a brief overview of what two different types of plants might look like, okay? We've got this one right here. All the vegetative shoots are down low. It's got leaves going to the side. This is kind of early in the vegetative growth, before we see a lot of production for reproduction. And then this one is growing more upright. You can see that most of those leaves are all up high. So if you grazed each one of these plants off at the same height, what kind of resources are left for regrowth? More on this one or more on that one? The first one, right? Yeah, because it's got more leaves and they're down below that point. And if you want to know more about the morphology, and if you're bored one night and you have lots of extra coffee to drink, okay, still just burning away in the pot, here's a good resource, okay? I don't know if they can see that later, but if you quickly write that down, that's an online textbook you guys can look at, and so that's a great resource. I'll give you just another second there. Okay, so let everything sink in for that little plant grass morphology. Now we're going to talk about some of the other important things. So here we go. So when grasses grow, when do grasses grow? Cool season plants, when do they start to grow? December. Right? Not December, right? They start to grow when? What's the major thing that affects them? They're growing back from their roots and their plant crown, right? And so they need temperatures to increase, okay? And so when we think about cool season grasses, we're looking for temperatures somewhere around 40 to 45 degrees, Okay? So if in February we get all of a sudden a warm spurt come in and the temperatures go up to 50, 60, 70 degrees outside and the soil temperatures get a chance to warm up, we'll start to see grass growth. Okay? So cool season grasses grow when it starts to be 40 to 45. And if we think about the warm season grasses, they start to grow in that 60 to 65. Now, they might start a little bit earlier. So if we're thinking warm season grasses like blue grama, buffalo grass, a lot of times we'll see them really start to take off in May. But they could come earlier or later depending on temps. So if we're looking at this for the distribution of the growing season and how much growth they actually do, okay, this is a cool season plant. It's got two spikes. Why is that? A cool season perennial plant, not an annual, has fall regrowth, okay? So it's normally annual pattern. If there's moisture, it'll try and do fall regrowth. If we look at a warm season plant, it pushes all of its resources into that warm season window. And it basically only has one season of growth. So that's important to think about because the two main grasses, we have both out here. Whether you're a little bit west or a little bit east of us here, we've got both cool season and warm season grasses. Now, if we look at the climate pattern for Akron here, we look at average monthly temperatures and we look at precip, and we throw in these patterns into it when the cool season hits, it starts to grow, and then we throw in the warm season, okay? We can see that it's actually falling right where the precipitation curve is also. But temperatures are getting nice and warm. So you can see when we look at this bottom line, which is that temperature, the average temperature, which plant maximizes growth when the temperatures are the hottest? The warm season plant, okay? And you can see for the cool season plant, that's when it starts to stagnate and has a dip in its growth before fall regrowth starts again. And this is just a general graph to show you when these plants are producing, okay? So if you think about the amount of biomass plants are producing, and if it goes up, 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 peaks about what time you think? When do they peak for growth? Right about seed production. And right after that, they start to taper off, okay? And that tapering off, that's kind of the initiation of what we would call the dormant period. So for here, because of temperatures and precipitation, cool season plants grow, warm season plants grow, and then they start to not grow. Why is that? Day length gets shorter, temperatures get lower, right? And then there's also here what happens in the fall and winter. How much precip do we get in the eastern part of the state over here? During the winter months, we get about a half an inch of precip every month on average. We might not get any. We might get an inch, but it tapers off a lot. So the growth follows that. Plant physiology, plants use up the energy from the sun, okay? They do that with photosynthesis, and the whole thing they're trying to do is produce sugars. So if you guys ever tried the Atkins diet or one of those things, right, we talk about carbs and protein, the plants are producing carbs for energy. They need other things, these other minerals and stuff, like nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. Those are some of the major ones, but they're also going to need sulfur, calcium, okay, boron, copper. And when the plants are growing, we want to make sure they can do a few things, okay? The major things we need to have happen with these grass plants that we can't hurt with grazing, we need to have bud formation, okay? We can't remove all of the plant growing points, so we need to have some buds left so they can form buds. We need to have root replacement, okay? So when the plants grow during the growing season, okay, they're using up those roots. And each along every root is tiny, tiny little root hairs that actually don't have a very long life, okay? They have a certain shelf life, and then those will start to die. But we have to have root growth and replacement. So if we have perennial plants out there and we're talking about a seedling, okay, what does it need to do to get into year two? It needs to establish its roots. So we need to have root growth. So that's another reason why we don't usually graze seedling plants. We need to make sure that we can regenerate the leaves after we graze them, unless it's during like the dormant period. Okay, so if we graze them in January, are the plants growing? Not really, not unless you're in Florida, okay? So the plants aren't usually growing, so that's dormancy, so you're not having a lot of effect on the plant. Regrowth after defoliation and the respiration that happens during dormancy. And so what's respiration? So we all know for photosynthesis, the plants are taking in carbon dioxide and pumping out oxygen, right? That's why we say, don't cut down all the trees in the rainforest, we have oxygen to breathe, okay? But what is the respiration? Do we do respiration? What do? We convert oxygen from, into carbon dioxide, okay? And so the plants actually can do that too from some of those sugars and all the other metabolites they have stored up. Now, if we talk about the plant and we're thinking about what's really going to affect the survival of this plant, is the intensity and quality of light. So if we're talking about a cloudy day, the photosynthetically active radiation that's out there is only usually about 800 or 900 PAR, which is the photosynthetically active radiation, okay? But if we're talking about a bright sunny day, it'll be 2200 to 2400. So three times the light on pure sunny day. The leaf area, that affects how much of the solar panels are out there, right? They have the chloroplasts, organelles that actually produce the sugars that the plant needs to use for food. And if we talk about the physiological efficiency of the plant, old plant versus young plant, okay? Water supply, and then some of the other things we've talked about. And then, of course, we need to make sure that it has water in the soil profile because nothing can happen without water, right? During the drought of 2012, not a lot going on, okay? So we need to make sure we have water. If we think about the plants as they're growing here during the winter months, the root buds are forming from that November to February, March period for cool season plants. The roots rapidly grow in March and April. And at the same time, they're trying to push off some leaves. And so when they start to do that, right, they're using up their reserves, aren't they? Because they stored it all up the year before. And when they start to push off new leaves, that's not coming, you know, when the grass is all brown, there's nothing photosynthetically active out there right there. That's all coming from the roots. So when you see those new leaves coming out, and until the plant gets actually a little bit more mature, it's not able to keep up with its consumption of carbohydrates. And right about this point right here, okay, for a cool season plant, we're talking June and July, starts to get enough leaf material where it actually starts to store stuff. So then we're starting to store carbs. And then if we don't go to seed production, those carbs can be redirected to root growth only or to vegetative growth, which is the leaves. Okay? All right, so now we're going to talk about what really matters for the grazing. We got about 9 minutes, okay? So 9 minutes here. Let's put all of your grazing observations every one of you have had for the last 20 to 60 years, download it, and summarize it, okay? It's not that easy. But what we'll try and do is talk about leaf length. So during the first half of leaf growth, a lot of times they're pushing all of their carbs into their leaves. Nothing's coming from their leaves, really, okay? It's going towards the leaves to produce the growth. There might be a little photosynthesis going on, but most of all that energy is going put into expanding, you know, it's like putting up your solar panels, okay? All that energy is going there. The next half growth, the three-quarters of the growth that the plant does, is self-maintenance. Basically, it's taking care of itself now. And now, when we go past that, and this is you know, an approximation, the rest actually goes into putting growth into other things. So it can go into seed production, it can go into root production, it can use it for expanding the plant size and tillering and things like that. Okay, so just understand that there's kind of these three different periods: investment going into leaves, leaves maintaining themselves, and then the leaves actually maintaining the roots and everything else. So first, if we're talking about carbohydrate allocation, it goes to leaf tissue and root propagation early in the spring. Second thing, when those carbohydrates are produced, they're going to go into producing dry matter, okay? So it's actually going to produce the bulk of the plant, and it's trying to elongate those internodes along the stem to produce taller plants. Third, it's going to go into reserve, so it's that storage and reproduction. Now, if we use our grazing really, really heavily during the middle part of the season, right when the plant is starting to shift to root storage or something like that, okay, it can deplete the reserves that we're trying to use. Or if we graze it super, super hard early, maybe the plant won't really get to the point where its roots really expand much this year. So I'm trying to give you the general basics because we're going to go through a number of scenarios. And when we talk about the height of the plant, okay, the lower leaves, they're producing carbohydrates that generally can go down into the roots. As you get up towards the middle of the plant, it can go up or down, usually the carbohydrates do. And then when we get towards the top of the plant, okay, usually that goes towards new growth. So if you're thinking about where the carbohydrates are going based on where it is in the plant. And then also we also have to worry about external factors, right? Because if this isn't an irrigated pasture, which most of us don't have the luxury of having, okay, water stress will cause things to change. So maybe they won't have as much vegetative growth. Maybe they'll sequester it down to their roots. So that's another thing to think about. Okay, so what happens with grazing? So when they're out there grazing, they're going to remove material, right? And when the grass is tall, do they eat just the seed heads only? Do they grab halfway down the plant? Where do they grab? A lot of times, the rough average is they'll grab it about 3 inches above the soil surface for that first bite. Now, they might continue to eat that same plant all the way down to the ground. They might only rip half of the plant, you know. But on average, they go down towards the soil surface, but they don't go all the way to the ground. Next time, if they go and regraze that same pasture, or if you're talking about shorter grasses like blue gramma and buffalo grass, they're going to take it down to 3/4 of an inch from the ground. They can. And how are these plants able to survive? Well, they've got different mechanisms. Grasses don't really have the luxury, unless you're talking about sand burr or something like that, okay, of having structural avoidance materials, things like thorns and spines to keep animals from eating them. So usually they have to tolerate being eaten. So that means they're going to be consumed. And if they're trying to avoid being eaten, okay, one of the things they can do, right, so we've got sand burr up there, is they got the structural avoidance, right, but they could also have chemicals. Do a lot of our grasses have nasty chemicals that keeps animals from eating them? Some grasses do, but for the most part, grasses worldwide don't have a lot of chemicals that stop herbivores from eating them. So that's why you can eat orchard grass, timothy, and, you know, sand blue stem. There's all sorts of different things the grasses and animals can eat. The other thing that helps grasses get by from grazing is tolerance of having a different type of morphology. So on that top left picture, that's a green on a golf course, right? That's a bent grass. It grows sideways. First thing it does, gets above the soil surface, goes sideways. And that's why you can cut it super, super short for greens. Okay, so there are grasses that are like that. They can handle being grown like that. So if you look at buffalo grass, when it grows up, the grass stems don't go perfectly up. That's why it kind of spreads and goes like this. Then also physiologically, we can grow super, super fast and get everything we want done before anything has a chance to graze us. That's another type of strategy. So you can either evade by height or you can try and grow really fast. Now these are some things to think about. Okay, so we've got removal of the photosynthetic material. Okay, reduce the carbohydrate storage, reduction of root growth, reduction of seed production. These are all the bad things that can happen. And whether or not bad things happen have to deal with what's our genetic potential. So what species of grass do we have? What variety of grass do we have? What are the growth-promoting features that are already out there? What are the detrimental impacts? Do we have drought? Do we have super excessively high temperatures? Do we have a super cold spring? Everything's getting a slow start. And the sum of it equals the plant performance. So what you want to try and do is give your grass all the benefits it can while still grazing it, and grazing it in a pattern, or grazing it overall so that not all the plants take all of the impact all of the time. And that's why people say, don't graze the pasture same time every year. That's because you're trying to spread this out, because you can't have your root reserves going the same place every year and then graze it. Because if you're trying to do root storage in July, okay, and you graze it in July every year, you're going to start pruning those roots back. So that's why you try and spread it out a little bit. Things that we can look at to promote the grass growth is this increased photosynthesis. Try and increase our tillering, reduce the amount of shading, reduce the transpiration. And transpiration is the water loss. And then we can try and put on growth-promoting substances. So after the tissue is removed, what happens? Okay, the plant is going to allocate to below-ground growth. It's going to try and do photosynthesis. It's going to produce fruit or seeds, or it's going to produce above-ground biomass. Okay? It's trying to decide. The plant is constantly trying to decide what to do. And what we're going to see is that the response is unique for every plant. Leaving more material is better in general, right? Leaving some material, dead material, is good. Why is that? Why do we want to leave some dead material for the grass? It's like having a mulch on there. It's adding organic matter. Okay, it's going to ameliorate the soil temperatures. Okay, so that's good. And then we want to make sure no matter what we do, we leave enough leaf material so that the plant can continue photosynthesis. And grazing impacts photosynthesis, right? Especially during that stem elongation period. So we need to make sure we try and regulate what our growth is by grazing during that stem elongation, during that stem elongation period. And for our critical period, we're going to try and make sure we make good use of all of our pastures during that time period for all of the different grasses we have. And in general, more grazing in within pasture creates more stress on the plant. That's what we're talking about. And we're trying to make sure that we can provide enough safe time for regrowth after we graze during the growing season. So if I finish my grazing on a pasture at the end of September, how much time is left for regrowth? Almost none, right? So if you're doing that, you realize you're giving up regrowth. And if we're thinking about when we can graze on these plants, it's going to not hardly affect the plant at all. We could graze it after seed shatter. Grasses really won't notice it after you graze it after seed shatter. But you take a hit in forage quality. So when we're talking about crude protein being 7% or less, that's about that time period when it switches. And we're talking about a plant response to growth. They might decline, which is reduced growth. They might have equal growth, or they might have increased growth. This is what it looks like when they have decreased growth with grazing. This is what it looks like when they have kind of a maintenance level, and then they decline. And this is what it looks like if they were going to have an increase. Now, what do you got to have in order to get your increased growth? You got to have optimal conditions, and you got to have multiple growing points to grow back from. If we're talking about blue bunch wheatgrass, it's really important to leave leaf area for that type of grass because not very much of it comes from the roots. Particular plant species have different allocation of those resources. So some will just send up a whole bunch of regrowth from the roots, others will not. Rhizomatous plants usually send a whole bunch up from the roots. Stoloniferous, a little bit more. Bunch grasses, usually less. And how much do you leave? Everybody knows the rule of thumb, 50%. But 50% when? Do you have to take 50% in September? Or can you take more? Do you take 30% in February? The plants are dead. They're not doing anything. You take as much as you want almost right before the growing season starts. So always think about how much you're taking based on how much regrowth potential there is in the season and what growing points you're leaving. So if you graze early, more chance for regrowth. You graze late, potentially none. And if you're wanting to try and make things better, a lot of rainfall or irrigation, and making sure that all your soil nutrients are there, because those are the baseline conditions the plants need for growth. If you look at defoliation-based studies here, if we look at competition between other plants, okay, severe grazing, moderate grazing, and none, where do those fall out? Which one ends up producing more in the end? Well, if we look at full competition here with other plants, so if you have a lot of weeds in your pasture, is that going to help your grass grow? No. So if you've got a lot of competition out there, you want to make sure that you can maximize your grass growth by making sure you don't have a lot of weeds. This is what happens when you ground level clip at 8 different times during the year. And you notice this is the total production for the year based on this one-time clipping. Why is it low in the middle? It's because we were impacting it during that stem elongation period. And so when we do that, it reduces the chance for the plant to regrow and produce a lot of biomass. So if we kind of catch it on either end of that, right, we're going to produce more. But we always usually have to sacrifice something in the middle of the year. That's why we try and move that around to different pastures. Just again, by moving it to a little bit later in the season, you can see that it affects the growth again. Then again here, you see that same type of thing. You're grazing it in the middle of the season, okay? And then if you go, this is looking at frequency, the number of times you go out and graze it. So if you graze it no times, this is what you get. If you graze it once on crested wheatgrass, this is what you get, which is actually slightly higher numerically. And if you graze it once a month, once every 2 weeks, and once every 7 days. So if you're managing your pastures and you can graze it once, right, while the plants are growing and let it grow to maturity, and then you come back in after it's already matured and went dormant, you're still getting the forage and you've used it once during the growing season. And that's the sort of thing hopefully you guys can take away from today. These are just some more data looking at other species. But hopefully I have 1 minute left for questions. All right. I could be standing up here forever. And I like your guys' idea of putting the microphones out and away from the people. Makes it harder to ask questions. So, thank you.